Well, I've been looking forward to this for a couple of days now. Here's what it is. On February the 3rd, 1959, that is commonly referred to as the day the music died.
And they were singing.
Right. It's been immortalized in song. People have talked about it for years and years. That's the day that we lost not one, not two, but three big music stars all in the same airplane crash. You can name them, can't you?
Why? Because you can't?
No, I know all three.
Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Big Bopper.
Yeah. One more.
Eddie Cochran? No,
Richie Valens.
Richie Valens.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Richie Valens. All right, so that, of course, a very important milestone day for music. But our next guest, Hans Feeney, the Reverend Hans Feeney from the River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, says that October 15th, 2004, is the night that comedy died. Thank you for joining us, Reverend. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We're doing great. Please explain. We get the one about the day the music died, but why on October 15th, 2004, was that the night that late night comedy died?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the distinction. There's not comedy itself so much, but I would say late night comedy. So that was the day when Jon Stewart went on his famous appearance on Crossfire when Paul Begala and Tucker Carlson were hosting. And he kind of went into his big speech about how their sort of the format of their show and their way of discussing political issues was hurting America. And I think that was kind of the point at which his role was changed, both in the eyes of the audience and probably a bit in the eyes of himself as well. I think, and that was kind of the moment when the Daily Show went from just sort of being a program where he would kind of mock news coverage, and when he kind of received all of this praise and adulation for in a humorous way, kind of telling people the proper way to talk about politics. Kind of eventually transitioned into telling people what they ought to think about politics themselves with kind of enough jokes sort of peppered in. So it's kind of the way I would describe it is it was a transition from being from comedy into what I would call advocacy with jokes.
Were you do you remember, Hans, were you watching at the time? Did you see it happening live?
I saw it right around when it happened. I don't know if I saw the actual live broadcast of it, but yeah, I was in college at the time.
And were you
shortly after college?
Like, did you understand the cultural impact of what that event could be, or what did you think when it was first happening?
When I first saw it, I remembered kind of agreeing with him to a certain extent. You know, I think unless you're a terribly partisan person, I don't really consider myself terribly political. Certainly not being a pastor. I don't talk politics at church at all. I remember just kind of thinking, well, you know, it would probably be nice to have for people who aren't kind of interested so much in that game of that kind of back and forth and want to just kind of hear a thoughtful exchange of ideas. It certainly seemed like a nice plea. So I don't know that what he was saying in that context is necessarily something I would disagree with. I just think that strikes me as the moment when that kind of a little bit changed the directory of the Daily Show itself, but also, and this is kind of more what I talk about in the piece, changed the way that late night comedy saw itself and saw what its role was.
I hate politics. I hate politics. I hate talking politics. But in this day and age, I feel like if you don't talk about what's going on in the world, you're kind of missing the boat. I somewhat agree with you, Reverend Feeney, because Letterman didn't get very political. It was funny, goofy stuff.
Well, Letterman became more political as time went on.
Right.
And that's when I wasn't as interested in him.
Oh.
I mean, it's kind of an escape. You think of Johnny Carson, you think of, you know, I just watched the video that somebody put on their Facebook page. Frank Sinatra's there, all of a sudden Don Rickles. It's just like a laugh fest. It's just kind of like a fun thing to do. And the good news is Jon Stewart helped make people think about things, and more people were talking politics, but that's not what I want. So I kind of agree with you, Reverend Feeney. I wouldn't watch it as much because I don't want to hear the political views. Show me the funny.
Yeah, I think, and that's kind of the point I was trying to make in the piece. I had a number of people respond. I don't know if it's the people's reading comprehension skills are going down these days, or I think it's maybe that people are just so used to reading stuff that fits with their preconceived notions, and they're so used to arguing that it's almost like they think you're going to say one thing, and then when you say another thing, they go, well, I already sort of wrote my speech for, you know, what you were going to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and I, so some of the criticism I got from people was sort of this notion that I'm saying that there's no place for this kind of Jon Stewart influence type of humor. And I wasn't at all saying that. I mean, I think, you know, the, even though he didn't start The Daily Show, the program really didn't find its identity until, I think, until he kind of crafted it into what it is. And, you know, a lot of the kind of clones of The Daily Show, you know, with the Colbert Report from a few years ago and Samantha Bee's new show on, I think it's TBS, and you know, some other programs like that. That's not necessarily the kind of stuff I'm terribly interested in watching, but I don't begrudge anyone for doing that. There's obviously an audience for it, and that's it's a fine way of trying to do things. But yeah, I just think it's more so, I think where it's been problematic has been in kind of pre-existing comedic institutions that really weren't that before, you know. So stuff like the, you know, the late night shows, Tonight Show, and I think, for example, where you see a lot of this influence is now in David Letterman's old show with Stephen Colbert, and then late night with Seth Meyers now, which are very much more like The Daily Show now. There's a lot more, you know, kind of fake news anchor reading the news into the camera and sort of, you know, peppering in jokes while you're sort of telling people what they ought to think about, you know, about these various stories. And it's, you know, that's fine for kind of other programs. But yeah, if you're someone who just wants to kind of be able to escape from this stuff, you know, as you're winding down for the night and just sort of have a collective laugh at how sort of absurd the entire world is.
Kind of like Weekend Update on SNL. That's what I kind of am looking for. I like that better.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you know, I'm a Norm Macdonald guy. This, I suppose, one of the best ways to start fights with people is to talk about who you think the best Weekend Update host was. And I definitely was a Norm Macdonald guy. I'm kind of the school of thought that that a comedian's job is to kind of stand above the idiocy of the world and to use humor as a means to kind of, as a sort of like a rope to lift you up out of it so you can laugh at everything with them. You know, whereas I see the Stewart model is more kind of, we're going to sort of sludge through the mud of the world and get to the place where we want to be, and I'll sort of keep it entertaining along the way. And yeah, and I'm much more akin to the sort of the Norm Macdonald approach to things. I think even now, if you watch the Weekend Update, you know, they've got one of their hosts or anchors, Michael Che, is a Daily School graduate, and it has much more of a Daily School kind of feel now, where it's I think more advocacy with jokes than it is just sort of pure comedy kind of standing above everything, which if you like that kind of thing is fine, but if you're the kind of person who sort of liked the thing you already had the way it was and don't want it to kind of be infected with this other approach to things, it's not always as enjoyable.
I'm anxious to hear Bill's take on this, because a former stand-up comic and you're a really funny guy. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, there's so much. Oh, if you're just joining us, by the way, Hans Feeney is our guest, a reverend at the River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. And the piece that he's referred to that he's written is on thefederalist.com. That's where we found it. And I loved it. I thought it was a well-researched and extremely well-written piece, Hans. Really nicely done. I agree with you on so many points, especially Norm Macdonald, who's one of the most underrated comics politically and otherwise of all time. He's so good. But I would say this to you, even though that night might have been very significant, that October night in 2004 on Crossfire with Jon Stewart, there's so many examples of earlier instances. For instance, so many episodes of Bill Maher's show, Politically Incorrect, which preceded that, kind of dealt with exactly this, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I would say so, although I don't know, and I don't mean this as an insult to Bill Maher, I don't know that I would really call Bill Maher a comedian. I mean, I know he's done a lot of stand-up, but that's kind of his shtick has always sort of been predominantly, I'm going to tell you the way that things are and the way that you should think about these sort of various issues and do it in a kind of comedic fashion. I mean, if I can, I suppose I can defer to Norm Macdonald here, who we've already invoked a couple of times.
Are you president of the Norm Macdonald fan club, by the way? Because we love him too.
If there is, I would love to be it. He's just wonderful. But I read something from Norm Macdonald a couple years ago that basically just said he doesn't really view Bill Maher as a comedian. He thinks he's a, you know, very smart and insightful guy. But I think his kind of main thing is not really comedy.
I'd agree. I'm not a fan of Bill Maher at all.
No.
Not at all. He's just, and not that he's not talented, and he is very bright. It's just not my cup of tea.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it is similar to, and I brought this up in the article. So I run a YouTube channel and a just kind of a multimedia thing called Lutheran Satire. It's very kind of small beans, obviously, compared to all of this. And it's, I'm certainly not as, wouldn't ever compare myself to Jon Stewart in terms of my level of my comedic chops or things of that nature. But I started doing this a few years ago because I found out in trying to teach people theology and teach them what our church teaches, I found that humor is a really useful teaching device. It's, you know, you're able to kind of get things across in a much briefer span of time than oftentimes you can otherwise. But what I do, I would never call comedy, because my goal is to teach people what I think is true, what I think is good, and what they ought to believe, and to just sort of do it with jokes to kind of keep them, you know, sort of trekking along with.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's not. So it's. So to me, I kind of. Yeah, I think I use this example in the piece. It would be like, you know, if for some crazy reason in some weird alternate universe, NBC were to call me up and say, "Hey, can you please host the Tonight Show and tell lots of jokes about, you know, the Augsburg Confession and the Council of Trent." Now, I would gladly take the opportunity.
Would I? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I would completely understand if people turned it on and they're going, "What? Why is this show now catechism class with jokes? This is not, you know, this is not what I signed up for. This is not the thing I kind of grew up, you know, watching and loving." Although I have kind of wondered if I think maybe some of the change with this is that, because, you know, before the days of YouTube and DVRs, the only way you were able to watch these shows was if you just stayed up late and watched them,
sure,
as you were going to bed.
Yeah.
And I think that might be part of the change, is because, it, you know, it's one thing to kind of watch a 4-minute, 5-minute sketch or rant or whatever it is in the middle of the day. But when you're kind of, you know, being lulled to sleep and you're kind of just wanting some entertainment to kind of unwind before you go to bed, there aren't a whole lot of people that, I think, that want to just, like, get angry about politics,
right,
and want to laugh while, like, feeling morally superior to the other side, you know, as they're going off to bed. It was, you know, usually you watch kind of some guests goof around, and then, you know, then you'd say, all right, who's the musical guest? The Gin Blossoms? No, I'm going to bed, you know, and that,
right,
kind of, that type of thing. And so I wonder if that has kind of changed some of this, too, is that if you're no longer in a place where people are primarily consuming this as they're lying in bed waiting to go to sleep, that might kind of very well change the type of audience that you get.
That's a great point.
Hans Feeney is our guest. He's a reverend at the River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, and a senior contributor to The Federalist. That's a web magazine. Go to thefederalist.com to read his piece, How Jon Stewart Killed Late Night Comedy. We'll come back with more. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I think we just learned that Reverend Hans Feeney would not stay up late to catch the Gin Blossoms when they were on
David
Letterman.
No, he would not. Nope. Hans Feeney is a reverend at the River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, senior contributor for The Federalist, and go to that website, thefederalist.com, to read his piece, his very insightful piece, How Jon Stewart Killed Late Night Comedy. I have to say, Hans, I'm extremely impressed. I normally don't think of reverends as having that big of a background in comedy, but you really do seem to know your stuff.
Well, I've always been a big fan of the stuff. I mean, I used to watch Jon Stewart's old MTV show, which was, I don't know, that was a handful of years before The Daily Show. And, well, the thing is, I think in order to be a comedian, you have to be pretty cynical. And that's also, if you believe, as I do, that all people are born in sin and have a sinful nature, then you have that kind of that same pastoral cynicism, you know, going into any situation. I think they're actually fairly similar vocations, in lots of ways. I'd imagine too, one of them being that, like, if both of you are a comedian and you're a pastor, you always have people telling you, you're a comedian, that's great, let me tell you about this comedian I really love who you think is terrible, and then you just go, oh gosh.
Right.
So it's like you work hard to craft your act, and someone's like, oh my gosh, my wife and I just saw Carrot Top and he was great, and you're going, oh yeah, that's, you know. And as a Lutheran pastor, you know, people go, oh, you're a Lutheran pastor, that's great, I just read Joel Osteen's latest book, and you're going, okay, yeah, well, All right. That's nice.
Boy, you make church fun. I can see your teachings to the students about the Lutheran faith. It, you know, when it's funny and you're having fun, it captures your attention, and in essence, you learn more.
Yeah, well, then that's, I think, the main goal of it is just to kind of keep people, when they're waiting for sort of the punchline to drop, you know, then it keeps their attention a little bit more keyed in.
Hans, hopefully. I have to say, since you brought up Joel Osteen, when I watch him, of all the quote-unquote televangelists I've ever seen, he seems to have figured out to use the same pattern as most stand-up comics. His setup, there is a setup punchline approach to the way he preaches. You recognize that, don't you?
Well, I'd actually never thought about that before. I just noticed his pearly white Osmond teeth.
Yes.
And that helps. If you got a set of teeth like that, there's hardly anything you can do wrong.
Right.
But no, that's a very interesting observation. I'm going to have to go back and listen for that kind of that cadence, I suppose.
Yep, it's there.
I was just listening, and I think this was happening on the morning show with Steve Cochran. I can't remember, but somebody was saying how they're not a fan of Jimmy Fallon's because he's not really a good interviewer. All he does is get these people on and do goofy things with them. I love that. I mean, it's a matter of taste, you know?
Well, the thing is, look, what celebrities have interesting things to say?
President Barack Obama, but singing was
fine.
You know, doing the music news or whatever they call it. That was great.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose it's nice to have one moment where, regardless of what you think about the president, so you got people who love him and people who don't. So I suppose it's nice if you can have the leader of the free world on TV and not have half of the country wanting to pull their hair out at that any given moment. So I suppose that's nice.
This question is unfair to ask you since we only have a minute, so I hate to, but give us a quick answer if you can. How should, when the biggest story in the country, if not the world, is American politics, is Trump, you know, this businessman that nobody expected to get this far, getting this far, how do you not address it on these late night shows? You almost have to, don't you?
Well, yeah, I don't think you don't. What I'm looking for, at least for myself, is I don't think it's a matter of not approaching politics at all, because all of it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, in the end, you're just sort of looking for, well, in the midst of all of this absurdity, what's sort of the best option? But everything about politics is absurd. Everything about the whole concept of it and the execution of it is just silly. So I think ultimately what you want to aim for is just something that just sort of looks at the absurdity of all of it and kind of invites everyone to laugh, you know. And I think that's what I think is kind of missing in the Jon Stewart approach and kind of the influence that some of those who have come out of that school have had, is that they're willing to alienate sort of half the audience and kind of prevent them from being able to be a part of the joke and being able to laugh in order to drive home a point. You know, and if that's what you're looking for, that's fine. But if you're part of that 50% that's getting alienated, you know, regardless of who they're lampooning, you know, I think there's just something that's much more inclusive and much more enjoyable when you're just kind of sort of trying to throw a laugh at the absurdity of everything party and everyone gets invited.
I can't tell you over the years how many stand-ups I've talked to who have said essentially that. I don't do any politics because I know as I'm doing the joke on stage, half the audience immediately doesn't like me because I'm making fun of their guy or their girl.
Right.
So there's something to that. Hans, it was so much fun talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. The piece is so well written.
Sorry, Bill. What's your YouTube channel if people want to watch that?
Lutheran Satire is just the name of it. And they can also check it out at lutheransatire.org.
Hans Feeney, again, reverend over at the River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan and senior contributor for The Federalist. That's the website that has the piece. We're talking about how Jon Stewart killed late night comedy. It's thefederalist.com. Hans, thanks again. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what's in the news next with Steve. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.